Coming in hot, 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 Lisa shares her financial tips and strategies to build wealth, have fun with finances, and be debt-free without having a restrictive budget. From bankrupt to millionaire, Lisa knows what it's like to feel as if you're living paycheck to paycheck. Her unconventional money multiplier system is the very wealth protocol that enabled her to retire 2.5 years early, pay down $100,000 of debt in 6 months, and move to her dream home at the beach. Hey, hey, welcome back to this episode of I Date Money. I'm your hostess, Lisa Drennan, your wealth activator. And today we have Cherie Prince in the house. She is an attorney and asset protection coach who teaches entrepreneurs how to merge their business plan with their estate plan to create a moat around their assets. I absolutely love this. Y'all know, well, maybe you don't remember that I was a paralegal. I was a bankruptcy paralegal and a real estate paralegal. And when I tried to get out of real estate, I was thrown in estates and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I got to get out. But I just love what you're doing, Cherie. Thank you so much for being here. So you've been teaching for over a decade and counseling entrepreneurs at every phase of their business. Tell us more about that.
Oh my gosh. Look, I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version because I know we have a time limit on the broadcast. But yeah, you know, just really grew up with a series of hard knocks as a child, had some family issues that led to litigation in the family. And, you know, my mom passed away when I was 16. Fast forward, I had a couple of failed business ventures. And at 30 years old, I decided to go to law school. So nice. That's the short answer. And, you know, I took with me my 3-year-old and my 6-month-old to law school. So it was an interesting time. But I figured that all the things that I was dealing with, these problems are not unique to me. There are other people who've gone through these same struggles. And so now I work with individuals so that they don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah, I love that. And teaching our shortcuts, right? I mean, I stepped into finance and insurance in 1987, but, you know, and I was like a bankruptcy paralegal. And my job was to create the budgets for the clients who filed for bankruptcy so that they wouldn't end up, you know, in debt again. And, you know, I just remember like going over, you know, their budgets and saying, okay, this is exactly what you're going to do, creating a money envelope system for me with actual envelopes. Yeah. And you know, and I was like, but then I ended up filing bankruptcy at 22, being a single mom. I just, you know, I was like, how did I get here? And I was so embarrassed. But then realizing, like, when I got into online coaching in August of 20, I was like, wow, I have this skill set. Why can't I just, you know, like, help people? And but there was this fear, right? So when you're getting into that situation, you've experienced the litigation, you've experienced the hardship of starting the businesses. Tell us more. What was that like to not be able to get that business off the ground and to try to figure it out on your own? What did you do?
Okay. So it's a 2-part story. My first business was a flop because I entered into a business with a partner on a handshake. And so, you know, anytime you don't have something in writing, it just leaves so much room for things to go terribly wrong. So that business was a flop. But in the mid-2000s, I did have, you know, 2 successful mortgage brokerages. But okay, here comes 07, 08. And I lost everything. Everything. Wow. And that's when I went to law school. So the thing that I tell folks and that I try to teach and counsel people on is being able to forecast. Because there were so many people in the real estate industry that did not see it coming. And I was one of those people. But I did have other friends who were able to kind of see the signs and prepare. And so now I teach you how to make quantum leaps, you know, reserve accounts, forecasting, using multiple entities, properly using insurance, because sometimes people overinsure. They don't really understand that, yes, insurance is a tool for asset protection, but it's not the only tool. Mm-hmm. So I kind of act like a quarterback for the professionals that you have working with you. You know, anyone who has a business, they're paying insurance for something. Well, guess what? That insurance agent is a member of your asset protection team. You got to be filing taxes or else Uncle Sam's going to knock at your door. So your insurance agent, I mean, your tax preparer is a part of your asset protection team. And one of the things that I love to help entrepreneurs do is really, you know, delineate between a tax preparer and a tax planner and how that person works with their team. So those are some things that I learned the hard way, even though I had the theory behind them, because even at 30, I'd already had an MBA and I was working, doing well, but I just was not prepared for the collapse of the mortgage industry. And it just wiped everything out. So now I'm able to take what I've learned from an educational standpoint, and I can actually tell you what it's like to soar and then, you know, fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's so important, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs get into business thinking, well, this is going to be a success. And being able to forecast, like I work with a lot of clients who come to me and they don't even have a business plan. It's like, okay, so what's your profit margin? And we, you know, talk about how much money they want to make, and they all come up with, you know, $100,000 a month. I want 20K months. It's like, okay, you know, let me show you your analysis and what this looks like and how many customers you need to get. And they're like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should raise my prices. Maybe I should cut back on some of my operating expenses. When you started off the business, I know 2008, the real estate plummeted, and then you decided to go to law school. What made you, other than the fact that your real estate business didn't do well, why law?
I thought about a career that would allow me to not only to continue to grow, but to help other people. And I'm so sorry. I'm a little hoarse tonight, but as a child, I wanted to be an attorney. You know, I hope I don't date myself too much, but I used to walk around with a notebook and I would watch Matlock and Perry Mason and take all these notes. And this was before you can actually record those shows. You had to be present at the time that it came on network TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I wanted to be an attorney, but I really didn't understand, coming directly out of undergraduate school, you know, the financing for that. You know, I didn't really know. I was kind of tired of school and I just had all these life things going on. So, you know, I was like, 3 years is going to pass whether I go to law school or not. I know that I, you know, did not want to get a PhD. I'd actually applied for jobs for about a year, didn't get anything. Like for a solid year, I did not make a dime.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, hey, why not do it now? If not now, when?
Yeah. And why you got into the litigation part of it?
I did. And it's so funny that you said that you worked in bankruptcy. That was probably the worst grade that I had in law school. Hated it. I mean, you know, theoretically, it seems kind of simple, but I hated bankruptcy. And I started out as a trial attorney. And I do love trials to a degree, but I do like the transactional stuff a little bit better as well. So after about, I guess, the first several years, I did a lot of trial work. And now I'm still a practicing attorney in the state of Mississippi, but I don't do nearly as much trial work.
Yeah, when I went to paralegal school and we, you know, took all the courses in each of the different fields, I was like, no, I didn't want to do criminal. I didn't want to do family law or divorce, anything like that. And, you know, I was working for a mortgage bank at the time. And I thought, well, let me try real estate. But it was boring. It was just so boring. And I actually became the bankruptcy paralegal first. But and that was fun. But it got to be, because I got so good at it, that's all. I didn't have any room for advancement. And I thought, well, let me try real estate. At least there's room for advancement, or so I thought, but not the way. It's almost like you get really good at something and they don't want you to leave. They want you to stay there and perfect that. And, you know, I had a really good rapport with the clients and all of that, and it was fun. But I just couldn't, I just needed to be more diversified and things like that. So when I got put into the estate planning, oh, I thought I was going to pull my hair out. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is boring.
Well,
worse than real estate.
Let's not use the word boring. It's an acquired taste. How about that? An acquired taste.
It's an acquired taste. I like that perspective. Yeah. You know, but I was like 23, 24 years old when I was working in that field. And then I went over to Social Security Administration right after that. And that was a lot of fun. But it was awesome to use the skill set as the paralegal. Social Security law is just so vast. And there's so many like different, you know, like we used to say, like, you know, Social Security law is like this, but then the supplemental security income is like this. And so you're listening to this on audio. I'm just taking my hands and putting them further apart, horizontally and then vertically. And I don't know why I just had to explain that, but to give you that visual, I don't know. I'm kind of wacky today. When you think about your money story and you think about that shift of a whole year of working with no money, how did it help? What was your attitude towards money? So if money was a person, what was your feelings towards money during that time as you were working yourself through school?
So I was very humble, but and let me just kind of go back, because during that year before I went to school, like it was an entire year before I went to school, I had to go live with my brother, because when I say I lost everything, I lost everything. Rental houses, cars, my family home, like I was literally destitute. And I went to go live with my brother, and then I applied to law school. And for a year, every dime that I had, I got it from him. So shout out, you know, my little brother who says he's my he doesn't like for me to call him little. He says, I'm your younger brother, which he really is. So yeah, it was a very humbling experience, but at the same time, I'm so grateful for it, because it was a setback, but it was really a setup. I don't think I ever would have actually gone to law school had the, you know, the mortgage crisis happened, because I was doing very well. You know, you got to remember, this was back when you can get 100% financing on an investment property with a 500 credit score. It was just, it was bananas, you know, and I was making money hand over fist, and you just think it's going to last forever because it's great. And so it really changed the way that I think about things, the way that I thought about things back then and even now. And I think that I am a more giving person, a more empathetic person. It just really gave me a shift in my worldview and in my relationships, because I was really able to see during that time the friendships that I had, the ones that were true friends that didn't mind that, you know, we're not hanging out a lot and spending money and taking trips and stuff. So it was pivotal, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, I love that. And in realizing, like, you know, what was important to you at that time, right? So wealth means a lot of things to us. Everyone sees wealth differently. How do you define wealth?
Time freedom coupled with generational wealth, because it's not about how much you have in the bank. You know, there's a difference between liquid cash assets and what you're able to touch and pass on to future generations. I look at wealth as being able to have the time freedom to spend with my family without having to worry about, you know, how many hours have I clocked this week? How many hours have I billed? How many coaching clients I have? Do I have something for my children and my grandchildren? You know, I think of that as true wealth.
Yeah, I love that. And our family is so important, you know, especially as it grows and our children have children and then their children have children. And it's so beautiful to watch that. When you think about the estate planning, I mean, as an independent insurance broker, I'm always talking final expense with my clients and saying, hey, you know, I actually had a brother pass away with nothing. And the family had to come up with the burial. I'm like, just get a final expense policy. So what is your favorite advice to give to people to plan on their estates, to combine their business plan with their estate planning?
One thing that I think is overlooked is also long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. My mother passed away at the age of 36 after being in a nursing home for 3 years. No life insurance, no long-term care plan. I mean, nothing. You know, we were just kind of passed around to different relatives living with them. And it's hard. And that was like one of my motivations when I started the mortgage company was like, you know, I'm going to have something for my family. And when it failed, you know, it was devastating. But what it also did, even before then, I have almost every type of insurance you can have. I just really believe in insurance because who thinks at 36 that you're going to need even a final expense policy or long-term care insurance? You don't think you're going to be in a nursing home and you need assisted care. So that's one of the big things. And if you are a service provider and the way that you make your money depends on you being able to physically, you know, build widgets or do a thing, then you do need to look at something for your family in the event that you're alive but incapacitated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so important. A lot of people shy away from insurance, especially health insurance, because it's costly. And, you know, they pay this monthly premium and there's a high deductible and, you know, they're not really getting the services. I mean, they get the preventive care. And that's really challenging to explain that to people, but you don't understand. You could end up in the hospital and it's going to cost you a fortune. And I don't know how, you know, what the percentage of medical bankruptcies are, but they're fairly high. You know, they're over 50%. And it's heartbreaking to see that because you don't need to go into debt if you just plan ahead and think about it and then, you know, manage your money accordingly to accommodate that. And there's so much, you know, money is a great tool that we get to use. And when we could cover ourselves with it, the proper insurance and take care of it and know that more money is coming on its way, it gives you that peace of mind that everybody wants. You know, everybody wants that security blanket. And when you think about building out your insurance, you said that you had a lot of insurance. Insurance agents love you.
Oh my gosh. And you know what? I'm going to share something with you. I don't think I've shared this on any podcast because I really don't talk about insurance a lot. But no, during law school, it was for my finals in my final year, my final semester of law school. I did not have health insurance and I became sick during finals. And I have only 40% hearing in my left ear. And so having to deal with that and like pay out of pocket was terrible. So shout out to anyone who does not have health insurance, find a policy, mm-hmm. You know, talk to somebody. You don't have to get the lowest deductible, but like that was something that, and I was what, 31, 32 at the time. Mm-hmm. You just don't think these things happen to you, but that's why I believe in insurance.
Yeah. It's like when I was working at Social Security, people would come in disabled, you know, and they would be all upset, you know, like I would, you know, be assisting them with filling out their application and making sure that they're eligible and all of that, going over their benefits with them. And they'd be like, well, I don't really want to be here. And I'm like, well, no one says when I grow up, I want to be disabled. You know, you don't plan on becoming disabled. But I mean, I had clients 30 years old who had strokes, you know, and they worked for the phone company and they were climbing ladders, carrying these heavy ladders. And they didn't expect that to happen, you know, and you know, just young people pass away all the time, just from heart conditions and things of that nature. And I always say, like, you know, if you have a heart, cancer, stroke in the family, you definitely want to get a policy, because the older you get, it's so much more difficult. You know, especially if you're over 65 and you don't have your funeral covered and you don't have the money in the bank to cover that. And I always say, even if you do have the money in the bank, do you really want to use it to cover the burial? It costs over.
Oh my gosh.
For a full funeral, it's over 12 grand to bury somebody. I mean, for cremation in the state of New York, it's around $3,000. That's just to get the body cremated. It's just like, and if the family has to come up with that, that's a burden. And do you really want to have your loved one just be publicly cremated? I mean, that's an option, but it gets to be really sad because that's your loved one. And so really coming up with a plan to say, you know, like the younger you are, the cheaper insurance is. And I love telling new parents, get your child insurance, because do you know how many children become disabled between the ages of, you know, 0 and 5? And they can never get insurance that's affordable because it's so, the monthly premiums are so high. When you think about combining the business plan, a lot of entrepreneurs don't have a business plan. So do you help them create a business plan? And how do you go about that?
So building a business is kind of like raising a child. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. It takes a team to build a business. So I no longer help with actually drafting the business plans, but I try to get someone on your team who can actually do it. And, you know, that person will work with me as kind of like the quarterback of the team. Depending on what state you're in, if you have an attorney, I work with your attorney in your state. I don't give you legal advice outside of Mississippi. And your accountant and everyone else to kind of help put those pieces together for you. But I don't draft them individually, but I do offer nuggets and tips on how to make it work for you.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. What a great service. You know, it's very needed. And when's the best time to implement something like that?
Really anytime, but before you start a business, you may be someone who is working a W-2 job, and you're considering starting a business, go ahead and start putting those building blocks together now so that, you know, as the opportunity comes up and you're making that transition, you have things together, because you don't want to wait until you're a millionaire to put together a plan for your money. you really need the framework before you start the business.
Yeah. and getting to be a millionaire is fun, and it's steady and slow. Like, so many people want this get rich quick scheme, and it's like, no. When you multiply your money, you get to do it over time, and you can really invest wisely. And even if you're a conservative investor, you can still make good money. I was excited. I like when I date money, we go on our weekly dates. The first thing I do is celebrate the assets and the investment. The market was doing fantastic last week. It's just like, woohoo. The ROI year to date was over 15%. And I'm like, oh, I love the portfolio mix of it. And it's fun and it's exciting to see money grow. What's your favorite way to make money grow?
My favorite way to make money grow, I would say I don't do as much real estate as I used to, but I do love buying physical like assets. I'm not great with the market at all. You know, I know that crypto is a thing now and I'm still trying to understand crypto, but traditionally what I've done is reinvested back in real estate. You know, it's something that's going to be here. You have great tax advantages, you know, if you're working with a good CPA or accountant who can actually point those things out to you. And that's a great way as well. If you have multiple businesses, depending on how you're set up, for tax offsets for businesses that may be cash heavy or producing, just having a mix of investments to kind of offset other things.
Yeah. An IRA, Roth IRA is my favorite. I mean, you can't go wrong with a Roth IRA. And everyone's always trying to avoid their taxes, but I love paying taxes. We get to support our communities and, you know, the different programs that we offer to people that need it, especially, you know, after working for the government for 30 years, it's like, yeah, pay your taxes. you want Social Security. I don't know how many self-employed people I looked at and they're like, what do you mean I don't have enough credits for retirement benefits? I'm like, yeah, you didn't work. Well, I worked. Well, you didn't pay your Social Security tax. So therefore you get nothing.
Well, look, let me give you this disclaimer. I'd love to pay my fair share of taxes. How about that? So yeah, I'm not saying avoid taxes, but definitely my fair share, but you know, not too much above my fair share. So
yeah, I would love for a flat tax rate to come about, you know. Just think how much easier that would be. Yeah. And definitely, I love the tax write-offs too. Well, Uncle Sam's been really generous, especially with self-employed, you know, creating the breaks that we get to have on our taxes and strategically using them to save money, you know. But one of the things I love is, you know, as a certified profit first professional, as we create a money bucket for taxes. And then when you get to file your, you know, end of the year, you might get a refund. You might not have to pay taxes. And look at that huge bonus that you've set aside for yourself all year round. Now you get to do whatever you want with it. It's your money. It's like an extra bonus. So it's fun. What's the best money advice you've ever received?
The best money advice I ever received, I think I got it from my grandma. And so I've kind of reworked it and I call it my dollar plan. And it's where I put or forecast every dollar that I get. So I have 10% that goes to faith. I have 10% that goes to savings. I have 15% that goes to lifestyle. That's anything that's like travel or just something that's not a bill or something that's required. 15% that goes to savings. And the other 50% is like all the things that I must do, my housing, my car, and things like that. And so my grandmother didn't have a lot of education, but she was just really smart with making sure we had what we needed and just, you know, staying on top of the water. So I don't think that's the best advice I've gotten.
Yeah, that's beautiful advice. And I think our grandmothers were very wise. I mean, my grandma taught me the envelope system and to save 10%, give 10%. And then I read The Richest Man in Babylon in 1992. One of my first clients that I helped file his retirement benefits, he's like, do you like to read? I'm like, yes. And he says, read this book. If I read it at your age, I would have been a billionaire. So I read it and I implemented it. And that's how my money multiplier system was birthed. And the percentages are so important. And a lot of times when clients first come to work with me, they're like, I'm not doing 10% fund money. And like, what do you mean I'm only going to have 50% or 70% or this or that? And it's like, okay, let's change your thought pattern. Let's rewrite your money story. And it's such a beautiful way to connect and to partner with money so that you get to 10x your profit and you get to enjoy it. And creating that reciprocal energy of giving and receiving is so beautiful. And the legacy that you're leaving your family, that been carried on from your grandma. I just love that ripple effect that it's creating. Thank you so much for being here on the show. What's the best way for our audience to connect with you?
So you can connect with me on LinkedIn if you have just a question. And I'm at Cherie Speaks is my handle. I also have a Facebook group, and there's no pitching, no promotions. They're just people in there raising their hands, asking questions about asset protection. And so it is small business entrepreneurs and solopreneurs Facebook group. And I do a monthly webinar that's totally free. You come and you will actually leave with a blueprint for an asset protection plan. So hopefully, yeah.
That is beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that gold. Those of you listening, please grab those links out of the show notes and share this podcast interview with everyone you know, because everyone needs this, okay? This is the foundation of our businesses to help us multiply our money and to protect it so that we can create this beautiful legacy, so that we can have the security. And remember, it doesn't matter how much money you make, it's what you do with it.
Hey, 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 thanks for tuning into the show. Give us a 5-star review and share it with your friends. Get ready to activate wealth. Be the next millionaire with a simple adjustment of your finances using an energetically aligned money multiplier system. You get to build wealth by partnering with money. It's time to have fun with finances. Pick a date, the link is in the show notes, to book your wealth activation call where you will get the one solution to multiply your money. Remember, it doesn't matter how much money you make, it's what you do with it.